Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about your car questions. We're going to talk about the industry, what to do, what not to do. And you're welcome to join us anytime you want. The phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone. He'll say, what's your name? You'll say, Bob, and he'll say, okay, hold on. And he whispers in my ear, Bob's on the line, and I say, okay, let's go to Bob. And that's how it works. 602-508-0960. It's easy enough to have your car repaired. The hard part is knowing who is taking care of you, and then in reality, more than anything else, it's, are they taking care of you for their wallet, or are they taking care of you because this is what you need? And that's the difficult part of the repair process who's making those kinds of decisions. When it comes to shops here in Phoenix, Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley is a good full-service family-owned operation, and Tom and I have been friends since 1983. I only tell you about shops that I've known for years and years and years, and shops that I can refer you to because that's important to me. So he's on Deer Valley, and he's serviced Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983. His staff is well known for good workmanship, excellent customer service, fast turnaround time. He has ASE certified technicians, and many of them are masters like I am. And when you're a master, you've passed all of the automotive tests, and you've been certified as well-rounded, bumper-to-bumper, front-to-back, and everything in between. So if you live near the area of I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have an auto repair shop, may I suggest Action Auto Repair, northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. When it comes to working on cars, there's all kinds of problems with cars today, and we have what we call pattern failures, where we have a particular problem. So there's a company called Dorman, and those of you that work on your own cars, you should have a link on your PC or on your phone to Dorman, D-O-R-M-A-N, and I'll tell you why. Dorman is a company that takes a part that was not made white at the very beginning. They redesign the part, and they fix the problem, and they put it out on the market. On a regular basis, we will use Dorman, and we will purchase a part from our jobber, our auto parts store, and we'll put it on your car, and it's going to be a redesigned part, but it's going to be just as much an original equipment, but the problem is solved. I'll give you an example. There's a shift tower on a Jeep, and what that is that it has a 6-speed transmission, and many Wrangler Jeeps with this manual transmission often experience issues with the shifter popping out of gear, especially over rough terrain. This Dorman fix is specifically designed to help prevent this issue, making sure the shifter stays in gear and the sloppy feeling shifter is tightened up, leading to predictably firm and positive shifts. So this shift tower is for Jeep Wranglers from 2018 to 2005, and they have to have a 6-speed transmission. So if you own a Jeep and you have a problem with when you're rocking and rolling through the desert, the shifter popping out, then this manual transmission shift tower is redesigned, and it'll stop that problem because that's what Dorman does. Well, they do all kinds of stuff like that, and we use them a lot, and they're a good resource. Because the hard part is we fix your car, and then what happens is we end up giving you something that has a pattern failure, and then it comes back, and we get another one from the dealer, and then another one, and then another one. And that's the difficult part. So Dorman has been around for God knows how many years. We've used them extensively for a lot of electronics that they redesign. And it's a really easy thing to do. When you go to look for an auto parts for your car, it's a good idea to call around and ask two questions. How much am I going to pay for it, and what brand is it? Don't be afraid of things called Denso, Nip and Denso. Don't be afraid of import kind of stuff. Don't be afraid of that. Pretty much all the auto repair parts that are sold and installed in the United States come from China. Doesn't make any difference what you think, that's where they come from. But the amount of money made in China is insignificant, because from the manufacturer it's sold to a warehouse, and then the warehouse sells it to a jobber, which is a guy on the street corner. Then this guy on the street corner sells it to me, and then I install it in your car and sell it to you. The overwhelming amount of money, profit on that part, is made once it gets to the shores of the United States. So, I have friends that buy parts, and specifically one of them, Wayne, goes to China on a regular basis, and what they do is they find someone that will make the part to our exact specifications, and then they'll test the part, and then they'll hire that person to make, you know, 100,000 of those parts and use this box, and then they'll ship them from China to the United States, and then from there it goes to a warehouse, and then to another warehouse, and then it goes to a jobber, and then it goes to me, and then it goes to you. Everybody upstream makes a lot of money on that part, and that part may be a $2 part, and by the time it gets to you, it's a $50 part. The parts that are made in China, and I'm not defending this thing, but they're made to our specifications, and they're made well. And I know that there's an issue with respect to people in the United States that make parts and stuff, but it's a cost difference. That's all it is. It's a cost difference. So the money itself, the overwhelming majority of the money profit, is made after the thing lands here in the United States. Anyway, we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Jim.
Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2005 Honda Civic. I'm the original owner. And the other day, it just went over 100,000 miles. And my question is, the last 2 years in what we call our winter, when it's relatively cold in the mornings, when I start driving, I could go over the slightest speed bump. And it sounds like I got a ton of rusty chains in my trunk. But once the day warms up, everything's fine. The car runs fine, and by the way, I've always taken it to the dealer for servicing and everything. I think it's time to move on. So, okay. If you could recommend somebody.
Okay, so is this noise related to the front tires going over the speed bump or the back tires going over the speed bump?
The back tires.
Okay, and the noise is definitely in the back end.
Yeah.
Okay, well, when you go over a speed bump, the only thing that's moving is the axles going up and down, and we have a spring and a strut, a shock absorber that's wrapped in a spring. And so I think what you should do is you can probably make this happen just about every morning. Is that right?
Yeah, well, and like I say, around when it's like in below, say, 70 degrees.
Okay. So now is fine. Here's what I think you should do. Some morning, go out there and get the garden hose, park the car close to where the garden hose is at, and I want you to spray down.
I can't do that. I live in an apartment.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say is if you wet one back end of the car on one side and then go drive it, and then the next day you wet the passenger side and then you go drive it, you'll know which side it's coming from. And so you just take the garden hose, and it's like you're kind of rinsing off the undercarriage of the car on the driver's side, but you just do it with the hose on top of the wheel. You just spray water everywhere. That's what I would do. But I could also put two guys in the back seat and say, hey, you guys, each one of you sit all the way close to the doors, and I'm going to go drive over this speed bump, and then you switch places. So John says, first he's on the right-hand side, the passenger side, and I say, John, you hear it? Yeah, I heard it and felt it. Good. Now switch. And then John goes to the other side, and then I go over the bump again, and John says, no, it's worse on the right side. We're done. So that's how easy it is to diagnose something like that. But it's more than likely going to be a bushing or something like that that is old and worn out, and you just simply replace the part with the bushing in it, and you should be back on the road and fine. But I'll tell you something else. I don't know what this is, but I'm betting it's not anything significant, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be anything that's going to cause you to have the right rear tire fall off.
Yeah, you know, like I say, the speed bumps. Like in the middle of the speed bumps, there's usually no bump. So I could go over like the right wheel going over a speed bump that way, and then turn around and the left wheel going over the speed bump.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. That solves the problem. Yes, that's exactly what you need to do. And then you'll find out which side's that. And then when you take it in for an oil change, you say, hey, I got a noise in the back end. Would you take a look at it? And this is how I made it happen.
And like I said, I'm tired of going to the dealership, you know. Like the last time I went for an oil change, I get even putting the synthetic in, I get, it's 0W-20. And they've been telling me to come back every 4 months, you know. So I think, I'd rather go. I live on North 32nd Street in East Camelback. And I'm trying to find a good guy to go to. Like I live in St. Thomas the Apostle Parish.
Okay.
And this guy Martin advertises in their bulletin.
Dave Martin is a good guy. I like him. He was going to be on the show today, with me today. And I know his dad, Dennis, and his dad, Dennis, and I are friends. And the thing with, the reason why he's not on the show is because I had to stay up north and I had to do the radio show up north. And so I asked him if we could reschedule because I've got workers here up north. And so that's the reason. But Dave Martin is a good shop, and he's a very honest man. And you will like him when you shake his hand, and you will recognize there is a difference between Dave Martin and many other shops in town with respect to honesty and integrity and knowledge and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, if you're talking about Martin's Auto, that's a great place to go.
16th and Indian, I think.
Say that again?
I think it's on 16th Street and Indian.
It's south of that, I'm pretty sure. 16th Street and Indian School, just south.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
All righty. Okay.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the answer on the other side of the break, though, so give me your other question.
Okay. Now, I just moved here 8 years ago from New York City.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, is there a good time to put air in your tires and gas in your car, you know, with the heat and everything? All these, you know, does the pressure go up and... does gas expand and all that stuff?
Okay, yes, and I'll answer that on the other side of the break. So you stay there. The lines are wide open. We have four of them open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let me push a couple of buttons here, and we'll get on the road. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange here in Phoenix. Phil's been around since 1968. Without a doubt, in my opinion, he is the best transmission guy around. He knows the old cars, he knows the new cars, but more important, he understands how a transmission needs to be shifted. And in the old days, we used to do it with vacuum and throttle angle and stuff like that, and today we do it with computers, but it's done the same. So when he gets to it, he'll take a drive with you if you can show him the problem. He'll also look at any leaks that you might have. One way or another, if you're going to need transmission work, Automatic Transmission Exchange is the place I would suggest, and they're at 40th Street and Washington. 40th Street and Washington. Denny, hang on right, just real quick. Let me just finish up with Jim. Jim, it doesn't really make any difference when you get gas. It can be in the middle of the summer, the middle of the winter, but in the middle of a snowstorm, in the middle of a rainstorm, it makes no difference where you get gas. I know that there's lots of talk about vapor and all that kind of stuff, but we're talking about you taking a penny and slicing it in half, and it really doesn't make any difference. As far as your tires are concerned, you always check your tires when they're cold. So you don't come off the freeway at 5 o'clock after you've been on the freeway for 30 minutes and pull into a gas station or an air charge station and have the tires checked. So you do it cold. Usually first thing in the morning, you just drive to an air station and check your car. Denny, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a two-part question.
Okay.
One is there any difference in depth, diesel exhaust fluid, from one to the other? I've been told yes, and I've been told no.
No, the answer is no.
Okay, great. My second question is, I have a 1933 Plymouth. It's got a 392 Hemi with a 671 blower on it, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having trouble. I don't know what's the electric fuel pump. on this thing, or it's the I have to use ether to start it almost every single time.
Is it carbureted?
Yes.
Two big
4 barrels, 500 four barrels.
Okay, are they Hollies or are they Rochesters, or what kind of carburetors on it?
Hollies.
Okay. Well, if you're using that, if you're using ether to start it up, it's because it's not being primed. And are you pumping the throttle 3, 4, 5, 6 times before you start it?
Definitely. And in fact, okay. I leave the electric fuel pump on for about a minute, and it still not seems to get enough gas up there.
Well, and the reason why is because the accelerator pumps are bad on one or both of the carburetors. That's all.
Uh-huh.
It's just, when you pump the throttle, you should be able to look down the front barrels of the two. You don't do this with, you don't pump the throttle when it's trying to start and look down the barrels, because if it backfires, it's going to take all the hair off your face. But, and make you cry like a little girl. But, I speak from experience for that. So, in your case, take the air filters off first thing in the morning, and I want you to pump the throttle and look down the front bore, and there's going to be some nozzles, and they're going to be squirting fuel in. And I want you to check both the front and the back one, right? Do you have two or one?
Yes.
Okay.
Two.
And then you look. Now, once you get it started with ether, take it for a drive, bring it back home, shut it off, take the air cleaners off, keys in your pocket, and pump it again, and you'll see a good stroke at that point. You'll see what's going on. Because you say, I'm having a hard time cold starting it, but you didn't say it had a bad hesitation when I take off from a traffic light. So I know accelerator pumps, I know they're good, but for whatever reason, they're not pumping first thing in the morning. That's really not a difficult repair.
Okay. All righty. Who would you recommend I bring the vehicle to? I'm over in Surprise, Arizona.
Okay. Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. There's no question in my mind that they are really good. They'll find it. They'll bid it. They'll fix it. Now, another thing I want you to try, too, is, let me step aside from that just a minute. When you get in the morning, you turn the key to the on position, and I want you to pump the throttle 5 times. Okay? Then I want you to let go of the throttle and see if it'll start. And here's why. The first pump or two is going to close the choke flap. Okay? So we need the choke flap shut on a cold engine start. Then the next 4, I'm hoping I can bring that accelerator pump alive. So pump it kind of viciously all the way to the floor. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And see, and then take your foot completely off the gas and see if it fires. That'll help. That'll help the technician fix your car. But Harker's could do that. 25th Street Auto could do that. Blackwell's on the other side of town. He can do that. Action Auto can do it. Kurtz can do it. We're all gray-haired guys that were born and raised on the carburetors you have. That's not, on a 1 to 10 scale, you're asking us to do a 3. Okay?
Very good. Thank you very much, Mark. I really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Leonard, you're up. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. I got 2 questions. Every time I have my coolant system checked out, it comes back rusty, and I go and have it flushed again, it comes back rusty again. What causes that, and what can I do to stop that? It just keeps going to rust. Keeps going to rust. And I got a follow-up question.
No, it's no big deal. This happens a lot, and we can flush that thing till you and I are both dead, and we're not going to get all the rust out of the block. Once it's in there, it's in there. And so, but we test it with a meter that tells us what the freeze point is, and if we know it's 50-50, then the freeze point's going to be around 32. And so all we do is test it, and we make sure it's 50-50. The coolant in there and the water in there is fine. It's just got a little red rust to it. No big deal.
Can I put a rust inhibitor in there?
You could, but it's too late, because inside the engine, it's not smooth. It's kind of... You know, it's I don't know how to describe it. The inside of the engine is not finished. And so what happens is you get a little rust in there, and then the rust just kind of spreads out. And nothing short of pressure washing the cooling system, and that doesn't work, because I've tried it. So it's just really a matter of, it's no big deal. other than the color that you're going to have red, as long as it's a 50-50 mix of coolant, it's going to do its job. The red won't have anything to do with it. It's not going to get worse. Now, some old guys will sometimes mix up a mixture of some Tide and some water and run that through the system. But I know for a fact I've done that on one motor 5 or 6 times. So I mix soap and water, different kinds of soap and water, put it in the cooling system, drive it, flush it, drive it. I never made any progress. So I just really wouldn't worry about it, other than the fact that your overflow jug is going to look rusty. No one cares.
Just a follow-up question, please.
Go ahead.
It reserves to gasoline. I drive very little, and I top off my gas. I only get about 7 or 8 gallons. My question is, should I let that run down, or does gasoline get old and stale? Shall I run that gasoline all the way down before I fill again? Can gasoline stay old and stale?
I probably would. I'd probably do it at the halfway mark. I would probably fill it at the halfway mark. That way you're constantly diluting the old gas.
Yes.
Okay, so I'd go to half tank, then I'd fill it up. Then I go to half tank, then I'd fill it. And if you work it out right, then you can actually have your wife do it when she uses the car to go get groceries.
Yes.
You could say, oh, by the way, honey, would you put some gas in that?
Yes, okay.
Okay?
Very good.
All righty, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Stay safe, Mark.
Stay safe, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can still use that. It's not going to be a long-distance call. 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes.
All about that.
It's after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're going to get to the phones in just a minute. We have one line taken. We have 4 open, 602-508-0960. If you want to ask a question, I get lots of emails and lots of calls, and they start off with, I live in Sun City. What shop would you suggest I go to? That's easy. Auto Dynamics has been around since 1982. I've known Chuck for more than 40 years. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. They're a good shop, and they know the difference between right and wrong. They're going to diagnose your car. They're going to guarantee their diagnosis, and then when they give you an estimate, they're going to come at the estimate or below the estimate. They're going to use good parts, and they're going to treat you right. So if you live in Sun City, Auto Dynamics, Grand, and 99th Avenue is a place I would suggest you go. Greg, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark. Quick question. I have a 2018 Tucson Hyundai, and it hardly gets driven, maybe once a week, twice a month. And I'm just wondering what I should do as far as oil changes, and the question is, should I drive that car more often just to keep it from sitting?
It's more important to drive it and run it through a heat cycle than it is to drive it. A lot of folks will just drive it to the store and back, or they'll drive it to use, let the neighbor use it to go someplace to Home Depot that's 3 blocks away. That's not good. We never boil the water out of it. We never get it complete operating temperature. So we need a complete heat cycle from whatever ambient temperature is to 220, 230 degrees and then back down. So use it for, do you have a 16-year-old child, a little boy, a young boy that wants to drive daddy's car?
No children at home. No, unfortunately. I have a Prius, and with the way gas is these days, I love driving it. And then only when I need to go to pick something up, that I need an SUV for, do I take the Tucson.
Well, the worst thing compare the two. The worst thing you can do is the short trips. We never get it warmed up. Then we end up with a bunch of water in the oil. And then we end up with a small amount of wear that we wouldn't have otherwise had. And if you're going to do that, how many miles a year do you drive on it? And then that determines what oil you're going to put in it. Because if you're going to do a 3,000-mile oil change, 3 to 5, then just use a cheap conventional oil. And if you're going to do a semi-synthetic, that gives you a little bit more, range on your oil changes. But in your case, you probably don't even put very many miles annually on it. And if that's the case, then just put a synthetic in it and change it once a year. So that's what I
do. Okay, so put a synthetic in once a year, and then if I do drive it, I want to drive it for at least how much time?
Well, just to get it through a complete heat cycle, yeah. You want to get the gauge between a half and three-quarter. And you might have to put it down a gear. You might have to pull the shifter down a gear and bring the RPMs up and get on the freeway and just kind of work on getting it through a heat cycle and then the car will love you.
Okay, I will do that next. I mean, it's yelling at me that it's time for an oil change for number of days, not for distance. And I think I'll just do a full synthetic the next time.
How many miles a year do you drive on it?
Under 3,000.
Oh, geez. If you're under 3,000, you can use any oil you want. You can use a conventional, which is the old-fashioned oil. You can use a semi-synthetic, a blended oil. You could use a synthetic. I hate to see you use a synthetic for $100, $125 oil change for 3,000 miles. I think you should go back to a conventional.
Okay.
020. Let me think out loud now. The 020 is a synthetic, and they don't make that in a semi-synthetic, or it's a synthetic period. So you're going to be like in the 1030 range. But look at your owner's manual and get whatever it is, the cheapest oil you change with the weight your owner's manual calls for, and it might be 020. And if that's the case, then it is going to be a synthetic, and then change it before the summer starts. So you're going to change it in April, and then you're going to go through the summer with fresh oil and through the winter with oil that's a little bit used. That's all. Okay?
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Anybody on the line, Gil? Mike, good morning.
Yes, sir. Mark, thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I have a 2013 Chevy Malibu with a 2.5 liter getting a cam sensor readings, and it also is in reduced power right now. And I've replaced both the intake and the exhaust solenoid, cam timing solenoids. And they're telling me I need a cam change, maybe. I have 158,000 on it.
Okay, and who's telling you need a cam?
Just a repair center on Mesa Drive.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to say the name. Yeah.
Okay, are they the ones that doing the work, or is that a phone call that came that said that?
No. I was there in person. And he said that at 150 to 175,000 should do a cam change, and he said it may fix it. But I don't like the word may.
I don't either.
For 2 grand.
Okay. You know, I'm an old time guy, so I would take this thing and I would probably pull one of the valve covers on it, or if it's got a distributor, I'd pull the distributor cap on it and I'd put a big old bar on the front nut of the crankshaft.
Yep.
Okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Well, we don't have that on this. It's all computerized, so I don't have that opportunity.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to take a valve cover off, or I'm going to look through the oil filler on the valve cover, and I need to see the camshaft is what I need to do. So I'm going to put this big bar on the crankshaft, and I'm going to go back and forth, up and down an inch, up an inch, back to normal, down an inch, back to normal. And I'm going to watch and see if the camshaft moves in complete synchronization with the crankshaft, which the chain is between the two of them.
Right.
And if I move the crankshaft and the cam doesn't work, then it's probably the case. But if I move the crankshaft clockwise and then counterclockwise, and the crankshaft counterclockwise and clockwise, and the camshaft follows perfectly, his hypothesis just went down the drain.
Yep. Okay, I totally understand. I'm an old gearhead, too.
Okay, that's how I would do it. You're going to need your wife to help you, and you can't use bad words when she does something wrong. Do you promise?
Oh, yeah. Or like they say, whatever you said, end it, oopsie.
Thank you for making me laugh. Thank you. All righty. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We got five of them. You're welcome to call in, and we'll be right back. Well, 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going to be here for another hour. So we've got some callers on the line, but I got some business to take care of. Blackwell Automotive's at 40th and Greenway, that whole northeast quadrant of the Valley area. I can find one shop that I can send you to and know that you're going to be treated fairly. I'm not saying all the rest of them are bad. I'm just saying that's all I could find. Tom knows what he's doing. He has a vintage cars division, and he has mom and dad's family car division. He can work on both of those. He's a good guy. I've known him for a long time, and he's very principled. What I mean is he's not afraid to confront a technician in a nice way. I wish it was a nice way, but in a nice way, and correct him. And I tease him about that a lot. So anyway, if you're anywhere near that northeast area of the valley, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway is where I think you should be. Somebody called up and wanted to know about a good Payson shop. And I've been up here for about 11 years. We bring our horses up here in the summer and then home in the winter. But the one I use is Dan at Coyote Automotive. He's on Main Street. My shop put a differential in a motorhome that belonged to a lady. She didn't make it to Payson. We made a terrible mistake on the installation of that differential. I didn't have a shop at that point, but I called a couple of auto parts store, and I found out Dan always pays his bill. He doesn't return parts. He doesn't try them and then put them back in the box and return them. That's the kind of shop I was looking for. So I said, will you help me? I'll have a differential shipped to you. You put it on. Make sure we put oil in it this time, and I'll pay you for everything. He did everything I asked him to do. He put the differential in, then I got in the vehicle and drove it back to Phoenix to deliver it to my customer. And the customer was obviously 3 or 4 days late on her vacation, and I apologized profusely, but I used him. He did a great job, and since then I've referred to him. I also want to say that like any other city in the United States, Payson has some real bandidos, and it's up to you to figure out who they are. But Dan at Coyote is not one of them. Let's go to Dan, and it's nothing to do with Dan from Coyote. His name is Dan. Dan, how can I help you?
Hello. It's about my 77 Paul wagon.
Okay.
Way back when, I had to get rid of the original starter and buying aftermarket.
Mm-hmm.
None of them seem to get me stranded. I'll turn the key to start it, and it'll just want to spin.
Okay, the starter drive's spinning, so it hasn't engaged. Is there any oil leaks or coolant leaks or anything to contaminate in the starter underneath the back of the motor?
No, not up in that area. It's got its oil leaks being a 77, okay. but not in that area.
No, that's why I asked. I would think, send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. I'm going to call a couple of friends of mine that are deeply involved in the quality of parts that are being purchased or manufactured and sold to the installer. I'm going to ask them, the starter drive, is this a big, very powerful motor? Got a blower on it or a turbo on it, or is it just a big cubic inch motor?
Oh, that's my 440.
Okay. And when it's hot, when you crank the starter over, does it sometimes drag the starter?
Oh, no. It'll start on one turn or two, and then I went into Glendale the other day, hung around for an hour and a half, came back, and it started spinning. And this is probably the third one because it freaks me out to want to go out in the mountains or something because, well, you know, the short story is I was Costco, and I went to start it. Spun, and then I thought I was going to be stranded there. My kid turned the key while it was still spinning. It grinded it, and then it started on the next try. So it's just unreliable.
Okay. Is there a dust cover on it? Is it automatic or standard?
It's automatic.
Okay. Sometimes you can pull the dust cover off of it and spray the nose of the starter with a bunch of WD-40. It's not going to hurt it any. And the question then becomes, is what's preventing the starter from doing that? Because when we energize the solenoid, it's supposed to do two things. It's number one, it's supposed to energize the solenoid. When you hit the start, we energize the solenoid, which shoves the starter drive into the teeth of the flywheel. And then the motor starts spinning at the same time. This could be a solenoid problem and not a starter problem. When you buy them, are you buying both of them together as one unit?
Harkers has been put on three.
Okay.
Because he's backing up his work, you know, and it's...
Right.
I don't want to keep going to Larry.
Okay.
Or Bob, you know.
Yeah.
Just keep bugging back on him.
Yeah, I, you know, he's, I'm going to tell you something. In my world, I think the world of him and Jeremy and their ability to fix things and stuff like that. I just think we just need to change the vendor, but I'm not quite sure that's going to work. Maybe
you tried so many.
Okay. Well, if I want to tell you something, I'm going to admit that if Bob has tried a whole bunch, and Jeremy's been a part of that, and they've tried all kinds of different things, including shimming the starter, not shimming the starter, grinding a little bit off here, grinding, changing brands, then I can't help you. I can't help you because if they've done all of that, then you have
not shimming things.
Well, you only have one choice. Wait till it gets worse and breaks, and then you'll be able to fix it. But I don't know the answer to it. I don't know if Bob's tried to fix it, and I'm going to tell you that I admire his knowledge and his and Jeremy's knowledge. I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry. I wish I could help you, but I think no matter what I say, you're going to argue with me anyway. And you laughed about the WD-40 thing, and at that point, I think, well, okay, fine. It's up to you. But I can't offer you anything more than that. I got to run. But thank you very much, Terry. You're up next, Terry. How can we help you?
Hi, I've got a 2004 Lincoln Town Car Ultimate, and the car has 36,000 miles on it. I got it from someone in Sun City that had it forever, and a brand new car, basically. But I've been driving it for a couple of years. Everything's fine. And I leave it over the summer, and I'm using another vehicle, and the battery dies on me. So I go ahead and put a new battery in it, and when I start using the vehicle, the alarm system starts going off. So I can't get the alarm system to go off unless I disconnect the negative battery cable and turn on the key in the ignition. Then it goes off. I drive the car. As soon as I stop and lock the car, when I unlock it, same thing recurs. So that goes on for a while. Sorry, this is a long story. But eventually the car now, suddenly the starter's turning and spinning, but it won't start at all. I ended up having the car towed into the dealer. Dealer gave me kind of a shotgun laundry list of what they thought was wrong. I didn't really agree with that and had it taken to another shop.
Okay, we got to bring this to an end sometime, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead, but anyway, just finish up.
The latest part is I took it to another shop. They sent it out to an electrical shop that specialized, and I got the car back Friday. The car starts, and I go to, get in the car the other day. The alarm system starts going off again.
Okay.
And they had replaced the harness to the fuel pump in order to get the car starting.
Okay,
again.
Okay. Stop. This is so convoluted, it makes no sense whatsoever. None whatsoever. There's no way in the world that anybody's going to give you good advice, but I'm going to do my best. I think you need to deal with the alarm system first. Okay? Sounds Good to Me is a shop in Tempe that I've used since 1968. They are really good with alarm systems. And the fact that the battery's dead might indicate that we've got something that's causing the battery to die, and certainly that needs to be checked. But Sounds Good to Me would be one of those people that you would take it and say, disable the alarm system for me. I want to drive it for a month with no alarm system on it and see what follows it. But you have so many convoluted things going on here. Dead batteries. I put a new battery in it, and I have to take the negative cable off, and then I put the all of that stuff doesn't really mean anything unless there's a pattern and a reason you do that stuff. I mean, the only thing you didn't say was you took both cables off and touched them together, which discharges all the capacitors inside the computers of the whole car, and that's called a hard boot. We're gonna boot everything brand new, and you could try that, take the cables off. But as far as somebody replacing the harness to the fuel pump, and it's related to an alarm system, gosh, I mean, that's just a jump I can't make. I don't know what to tell you, but Sounds Good to Me is the place I think you should take your alarm to. The other thing you could easily do is to call a couple of shops in your geographical area, and you say, who is it that you use to deal with car alarm stuff? And maybe there's a shop in your geographical area that three or four shops will name. And those are the ones, but I'm not smart enough to be able to handle everything, and car alarms is something I lean on other people for, and like I said, it sounds good to me. But good luck to you. That's the best I can offer you. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open if you want to do that. And who's on right now, Gil?
We have Harold.
Harold, good morning.
Hi, Mark.
I got a battery question for you. I was out at the lake the other day talking to a pro tournament fisherman who was checking out some changes to his boat, and he told me that he took out all of the conventional batteries in the boat and replaced them with lithium-ion batteries. And the reason he did this was mainly he could take like 130 pounds out of the weight of the boat. And I guess that's important if you're a pro, you know, fisherman. Mm-hmm. But my question to you is, I did not think lithium-ion batteries were available to the public, that you could just go out and buy them. Is that true? Could I put one in my car, for example?
Yes. Oh. You'll pay $300, $400, $500 for it.
Okay.
You want to do
that? I was wondering, because I've never seen them advertised, and no one has ever suggested to me that I put one in.
We don't. We don't unless there's a reason. Let me give you a good reason. I own a 55 Chevy pickup truck, and it has a 6-volt system. And I need more power, but it's an original truck, and I don't want to change the entire electrical system over to 12 volts. So I just recently paid $325 for a 6-volt ion battery that has 1,000 CCAs. It's going to turn this motor over as if I've got 24 volts going to the engine as opposed to 6. So I had to change the mounting for the battery. I had to change it. I had to had to rewire the cables. But I'm going to have tremendous power out of this 6-volt lithium battery to crank over that 6-cylinder. And like I said, it's north of $300.
Have they kind of solved the problem of heat-induced problems with those things? If you recall, when they were first put on the Boeing Dreamliner aircraft, they had a lot of problems with battery compartments overheating and that type of thing.
That kind of wives' tale is something that permeates our industry all the time. Those kinds of wives' tales. What relationship do we have with a Dreamliner and a Lincoln Continental? There's no relationship. We can't extrapolate. I've got a problem with the battery in my boat, and all of a sudden that condemns the entire battery line. We can't do that. We can't cross over and you know, we can't just automatically assume everybody with red hair is a bad driver. It's just not going to work out. So it's just technology. I don't know why you'd want to go to a battery that costs that much money. Why would you do that? What problem are you going to solve? How is that going to make your life better? It's going to make my life better because I don't have to jump start this 6-volt thing, and because it goes, and it's going to go, and that's what I wanted. So it's the lithium batteries are new. The lithium batteries are a little bit tricky, and the lithium batteries are going to be a whole lot better in 5 years than they are now. After we determine what size we need and what size is the most approved, the most demanded. See, we're not going to be able to sell lithium batteries that have this giant source of electricity for Ma and Pa kettle. They're not going to buy it. So, but if a guy's got a high performance V8 power stroke motor and he wants to crank that diesel over real fast because he's got high compression and because he's got all this fancy stuff on it, then yeah, he'll need something like that. But as far as upgrading that kind of stuff, it's not a good idea, and it's not a good idea, and your car won't love you more if you put this giant lithium battery in it. It's not going to love you anymore. The bad news is when it goes bad, it's going to cost a whole lot more to fix it. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, good afternoon. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, you're stuck with me for another hour, as long as you don't push the button on the radio. We're going to talk about cars, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and this show is sponsored by a variety of shops in town that I personally have vetted and that I've known each and every owner for lots of years, that I've known all of them for at least 10 years. So it's a good idea to have another shop owner recommend you, just because we know the difference between good and bad. Kurtz Automotive is a good example. Kurt is a great guy. I can't tell you how many times I've sent a customer to him, and he made both of us look like a hero. My favorite story is a lady's told by two different shops that she needs a new engine because of an oil pressure problem. Kurt replaces the oil pressure switch, and this truck is fixed. For $40, it's fixed. And that's when I first met him, and that was a long time ago, perhaps 15 years ago. So Kurtz is a good guy. I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. If you're looking for a good shop and you live in that area, then Kurtz is a good shop. Now, folks, it's no secret that no matter what kind of relationship we have with between a customer and an organization, a customer and a business, that sometimes it's the problem of the business and sometimes it's the problem of the customers. There's times in my world that the customer will come into my shop and I will talk to them about symptoms. But they don't want to talk about symptoms. They want to talk about all the things that they've done. And I say gently and nicely, well, those things that you're talking about now didn't work, so can we just, can you just answer my questions? How about this? No, I already did. So it comes a point in time, and this happens, I would imagine, at most shops at least once a month, when in your head you're ready for the next question. How much is your checkout time? And normally the answer might be $75 to $150, just depends on where we start and where we end up. But in a case where you have a customer in front of you that you've just spent 10 minutes with, and they've told you that everything you talked about doing was wrong, then I'm going to go to $350 to $500. I'm not going to smile when I say it either. I just don't want it. I'm like a lot of other shops. We just don't want the argument. You're telling us how you want us to fix your car, and you've not been able to do it yourself. And you don't want us to do what we want to do. You want to still direct us, and you want to tell us how to fix your car when we lift the hood and everything underneath it's new. So what sense does that make? You're better off to send your pretty wife down and have her tell us that. So it's just not going to work out. Self-defense for car expense has everything to do with you. But I'm going to tell you internally, a lot of us shop owners, we don't want to have that front counter conversation with some guy who's going to tell us he can't fix it, and he's going to tell us how to fix it. That doesn't work. And if you've never been a customer before, that's the death knell. It's just, goodbye. And so go talk to the kid with three whiskers at the auto parts store and have him guide you to your next shop. It's just not something we do. We don't have time for that. We don't have time. Symptoms. You are best served by telling the shop the symptoms, and you're really best served if you just write them down. This is my car. This is what's happened. This is how I make it happen, or this is when it happens, and I want you to focus on that and call me with an estimate. Tell me what your checkout charge is and call me with an estimate. All of us are overbidding our checkout charges. All of us do. Sometimes I'll put a $200 cap on it, knowing doggone well that my guys are going to find it between $75 and $125, but I'd rather be a hero than a dog. So if we call back and say, hey, good news, we got it for $125, we found it, and it was one of those things where you find it, and a dollar later you fix it. So you had a vacuum line over here on the cruise control module that had fallen off, and the tip was broken, so we just drilled a new one, put a new metal sheave in there, and then we put the vacuum line back on it, and you're done. So really and truly, the whole thing was $125 to find it and to fix it. Boom, we're done. There's lots of shops out there that do that. You can go to marksalem.com and look at them. They're all good guys. Let's go to the phones real quick, and let's go to Derek. Derek, I think you're next. How can I help you?
Hi, it's Mark. And when you turn on, your AC max, it doesn't blow out of the center vents anymore. It sounds like it's like, a wastegate or something's not opening up.
Okay. I missed what kind of car it was.
2008 Nissan Titan.
Okay. So when you go to Max Air, the air doesn't come out of the vents anymore. Where does it go?
Correct.
Do you know?
It maybe to the floor and out the defrost, but it's not. It's not a really strong breeze coming out of there, but you can hear the fan going.
Okay.
And then if you try to switch it to the floor, it'll get to the floor, but I can't get it to come out the center vent.
Okay. Let me explain. there is a door called a blend door, and the blend door gives you outside air or inside air. But then we also have a mode door, and the mode door is a three-position door, and it gives you top vent, defrost vents, center vents, and floor vents. So when you go to maximum, we're supposed to close off the outside air coming in, and we're going to recirculate the air inside the car. So you said this problem exists when you go to max air. So I'd be looking at the blend door, okay? I'd be looking at the blend door, not the mode door. And it's just a matter of tracking it down. Is it electric? Do we have a good ground to it? Is the connection good to the blend door? Is there a half of a taco that fell down through the dash vents and then it's jammed the door open or closed or whatever? So that's really what it's all about is I like the fact that you've got it to maximum air. What I want you to do is I want you to go to normal and I want you to leave it there for a very long time and see if there's anything wrong, because that will help in the diagnosis, because you walk in and say, when it's in normal, I can ask for defrost, center vent, and floor, and bingo, I got all three. But when I'm in this mode and I go to max air or recirculation or not recirculation, I have a problem. That's the kind of guy we're going to hop over the counter and hug, because you've just told us what we needed to know.
But I've actually tried that because it warmed up, so I wanted the air. So I tried it at max and with it pulling outside air in, and it's the same thing. Those center vents won't blow.
Okay, but you can't pick both, though. Maybe you made a mistake, but you said, I've tried both of them. You get one or the other. You're either getting outside air or you're getting recirculation, one or the other. You can't pick both.
Yeah. Okay. On that truck, you got a button where it says max air, the other one where it has just regular AC, and which pulls the outside air in on the regular AC, and neither one of those, it doesn't change, you know, the center vents at all. It's still
well. Then it sounds like that you've either got a controller problem, which is I want you to continue to play with it and to see if you can make anything else happen, because we've got so many different places to look. You might save yourself some money if you can walk in with a couple of more sentences. And so when I do it cold, it does this. But when I ask for hot and I ask for this vent temperature, or this vent, top vent, middle vent, bottom vent, then it's different. That's the kind of talk we really embrace, and that's what will help. But I can't tell you what's the matter with it.
Okay. Do you recommend a shop in the East Valley that once I try that out, I can take it to?
Yeah, Thompson's is my shop in the East Valley. They're on Stapley, just east of Stapley on Arizona Avenue. Brian and Thelma are very, very good, and they've got some really good technicians. Now, I also want to tell you, your Titan car is not a double-digit car on the road, so it's not a real mainstream vehicle. We're going to have a scanner, because we're going to have to look and see as we do the air conditioning controls on whether the command is being made and whether it's being accomplished. So that will be part of this problem, is looking at that. Another thing that you might do is take the battery cables off your car, touch them together two or three times. Touch the cables together, not the battery terminals, the cables together.
Yeah.
And then put it back together. Positive on first, negative on last, and see if that does anything. That's a big reboot, and you could try that yourself.
Okay.
You're gonna have to reset all the clocks and stuff, but that's no big deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a number for them, or just look them up?
No.
On the web?
Just Thompson's Auto Repair. Thompson's Auto Repair. Oh, both Brian and Thelma's parents were in the gas station business back when I was in the '60s. And I was always impressed. And then Brian is a Vivian and Thelma is a Thompson, and the two families that really dominated gas stations in the '60s and the '70s in Mesa's was the Thompsons and the Vivians. And so they got together in that fashion, but they've been in the business a very long time. But here's good thing about Brian. He'll give it a try, but he may say to you, this is not, we're not the shop for you. And as a last result, you're hoping to find somebody at a Nissan dealership that has already fixed this. And so you don't really want to pay for on-the-job training, and it's okay for you to say that to the shop. I don't want to pay for on-the-job training. if you've seen this before or if you think you can fix it, let's do that. But don't dig a big hole and then hit me for a $300 checkout and tell me you don't know what's wrong. That's not fair. And so it's okay to have that conversation even with my shop, okay?
All right, I appreciate your help.
Okay, good, Derek. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
I've got a 2013 Toyota Tacoma base model with a four-cylinder.
Okay.
And I've got a vibration in the left where you rest your left foot down on that plastic pad.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked the dealer to look and check the front end and everything, and they say there's nothing going on. But I'm just wondering if there's somewhere else to look at it.
Well, I think what's missing here is you didn't take a gray-haired guy for a ride and let him feel it. That's what I think you're missing. And I want to tell you something. I've never heard of this before in my life. So you and I are going to talk for just a minute, and then I'm going to take a break, okay? So I want to ask you a question. Is the vibration speed-related of the vehicle or RPM-related of the engine?
It's vibrating when you're driving.
Okay. Only when you're driving.
No, it vibrates a little less. The engine seems to run a little rough, too, so it's got a vibration that's there when you're at stoplight, too.
Okay. Okay, good. So what I hear you saying is the vibration is there when I'm stopped.
And yes. When you run it, yeah.
And when you're going. Okay, good, good. Now, how about the other side of the car? Did you swap and you go to the other side of the car and put your feet flat on the floor and have your wife drive? Is there a vibration over there?
No, I haven't done that.
Okay. All right, get your wife involved. Just tell her to quit drinking like a couple hours before she's driving. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm teasing you. That's what I would want to do is I'd want to switch places with you. So if you take it into a shop, you can say, can we go for a drive? And I'll drive first and tell him what RPM and what speed, and then we'll switch real quick and that way he can do it. I'm thinking motor mounts because you're talking about a vibration that you feel when the car is stopped. How many miles are on this car?
112,000.
Okay. I'm thinking that more than likely you've got the driver's side mount is probably the guy. And what I would do is I would have you sit in the car and I'd have you make the vibration happen and then I'd put a piece of wood underneath the motor and I'd use a floor jack and I'd lift the driver's side of the motor up with one or two pumps and if you go, stop, it's gone, then I'm going to replace the driver's side motor mount. But don't go drive. Don't do that because the guy on the radio said that. Go through the process. What do you have a shop that you deal with? What part of town are you in?
Just in the East Valley for a year now.
Okay.
So I'm formerly West Valley.
Okay. So East Valley, major cross streets.
Power Road and Baseline.
Okay. You're going to have to come up either to Thompson's on Main Street.
Right.
Or closest I can get anybody else to you is I-10 and Warner Road.
That's pretty far away.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Thompson's. But I think the key here is you saying that I'm at a traffic light, I'm not moving, and I feel the vibration. It has to be a motor mount problem. I would bet big money. And the mileage kind of leans that way. So that's what I think. Okay, let me know how I did. Okay?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. You bet. 602-508-0960. Gil is sleeping. You can hear him snoring in the background. But that's because nobody's calling in, and the lines are wide open. Five lines wide open, 602-508-0960. Okay. As a car repair shop owner since 1979, I have had my fair share of customers. In this show, we've already talked about what to say, what not to say to the shop and stuff like that. And then we've talked about, but the big problem, a problem that we oftentimes entertain is the guy that wants to direct the repair. You'll just notice that just a minute ago, Bill and I had a conversation about his Tacoma. And he didn't tell me what Google said, what YouTube said. He didn't tell me what his neighbor said. He didn't tell me what his brother-in-law was in Wisconsin said. He didn't do any of that. He just answered the questions. And so I've been doing radio since 1988. And my success rate as far as getting close to the repair is pretty good, I'm told. I don't keep track. I don't care. But the idea is the vibration was there when the car was stopped. This is the kind of car that comes in where the wife has got a laundry list of things that the husband wants us to do. But the key is the vibrations there when the car is stopped? That's the key. That's all I need to know. Show me what you're talking about and go. I'll call you with an estimate. That's the way it is. So let's go to Jim. Jim, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Well, I've called on this minor issue twice. It's my daughter's 2001 Toyota Corolla LE with an electrical problem. But my question's about a battery. I put a 1-year battery in it because I'm trying to sell the car. I didn't want to invest in a $250 battery. The battery was dead. I took it back to the shop I went to, and I used your advice. I was very nice. I didn't go in and act like I knew what was wrong. I just explained it to him. And the reason I'm going to tell you that is because they didn't charge me for this diagnosis. But anyway, he said one of the cells in this 1-year battery was no good, and the battery was less than a week old. Does that happen very often on an inexpensive battery?
It happens on expensive ones, too. Rolls Royces, okay, all the way down to the Euroliner airplanes, all the way down to a 63 VW.
Okay.
The question is, let me ask you, I'm going to ask you kind of a lie detector test here, okay? Are there caps that you can peel off this and look inside to see the battery acid in the plates?
No, and I'm an old guy because I know how I used to do that, but no, not on this battery, no.
See, I'm a little suspicious about his ability to know that one of the cells is bad then. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, sometimes
he gave me
a printout
that showed me, supposedly, yeah.
Okay, well, there are computers out there that can guess. but the real issue is if it's got a shorted cell, it starts off at 13 volts because we charge it up to 13, and then we test it every hour, and we see a voltage drop, and each one of the cells on a 12-volt battery is to 2 volts, and then pretty soon it goes from 12 volt to 10 volts, and then it stabilizes at 10, and then it falls a little bit again. So, yes, over a long period of time, but I'm not going to let my guys do that. That costs money. I'm going to run a quick test, and we're going to be done. So.
Right.
No, but, yes, I was suspicious at first about being able to do it, but then I understand that that's probably what his computer did, and I'm going to agree with that. I want to tell you the battery is good. It's how much it weighs. So if you go on the internet and you find this battery is 28 pounds and this one over here is 36 pounds, the 36 pound one is going to cost a lot more money than the 28 pound one. And so
go ahead.
No, I just get one from somebody that's going to warranty it for you. So buy it from an auto parts store if you want to install it yourself, or buy it from a shop.
Yeah.
And you're going to be seeing us every 2 years anyway. I mean, my wife's car just gave up the ghost not too long ago, and I think it was 26 months is when we put the battery in. And believe me, you know, when she gets caught and with all of her makeup in the car and there's no air conditioning and it all melts, you know how much that costs, don't you?
Of course. All right. I will buy a new battery for this thing and then just try to sell it as fast as I can. So.
You know what? You yeah, and I agree. And you know what I do is I would – now, you're not going to be able to fool the auto parts store. So, yes, just buy yourself a cheap battery and get rid of the car. Oh, by the way, how much you want for it?
You know, it's a really – I mean, the thing looks like it's only a 2-owner. Trying to get about high $3,000, $3,500, $3,900.
Okay, so it's an 01 Corolla. How many miles?
192. The 192. Dash is perfect. The seats are perfect. The thing is immaculate.
Okay, I'm going to go 3,300. I'm going to draw the middle out of it. Okay, Mark at marksalem.com. You send me an email with your phone number, Mark at marksalem.com. And anybody that wants to look at this, I want to tell you about 192 on the clock. I want to tell you something. Motors will run for a very, very long time. Every motor we replace is because the nut behind the wheel caused the problem. They overheated the hell out of it, or they ran it low on oil, or they abused it. So a car for $3,300 is like a big lighter. You just use it until this is exactly the kind of car I would buy. And I did buy my three kids because it's easy to insure, and they're going to make mistakes. And actually, I'll be honest with you. I bought pickup trucks because I figured I'd only have one other person sue me. So with a Corolla, you got the front seat and then the three kids in the back seat. So you got four families that are going to sue you if you have a wreck. And so I always thought a pickup truck, a bucket seat, you know, I got one other kid in the car and we're home free. But this is a Bic lighter car. If this thing lasts a year, you take 12 months into the 3,300 and it costs whatever that is your monthly cost. That's a deal. So I like these kind of cars, and I'll tell you what else I like about these cars. They're good rental cars. Mm-hmm. People don't care what the clock's got on it. They just want the air conditioning to blow cold, and they want the radio to work. That's it. So
it does, and I put a new fuel pump in it for $600 last week, and it's got brand-new brakes on it. The car it's a steal.
Okay.
It's a steal.
Okay. Are we set at 33? Is that going to be okay with you?
Let me send you I've got pictures of it. I'll send you the pictures later today.
No. I'm just going to put you together with anybody who, both of you are going to email Mark at MarkSalem.com, and everything I get about the Corolla is just, I'm going to forward to you.
Okay, 3,500. I'll tell you what, $3,500, we'll let it go.
Okay, I'm going to put the 3,500 because you first said 3,000 and 3,500, and so I picked the middle.
I'd like the 3,900, but I'll go to 3,500.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I missed that. You know, Gil's in my ears, the guy that's actually flying the airplane, and he's telling me dirty jokes while I'm doing on the radio, and it's just really confusing. So, anyway, all right.
I'll email
Jim,
you.
3,500, we're locked down. Yeah. Okay, let's go to Joe. Joe, how are you? What can we do for you?
Good. I've got a 2006 Chrysler 300, 256,000 miles. When I started up from a cold start, there's a clanging noise. Sounds like it's coming from the front of the engine. Okay. I'll drive for about 10 minutes, and it's gone. And it only happens during a cold start.
Okay. The only thing at the front of the motor that might make a clanging noise is the timing chain. Does it have a belt or a chain, or do you know?
So, well, you've got that serpentine belt, right? But then there is a timing belt in it, and I had it replaced at 180,000 miles.
Okay. But I mean, the timing belt is rubber, but it's got a tensioner on it. And I don't know if the tensioner is oil pressurized or if it's a spring-loaded tensioner. I'm not quite sure how the tensioner works on that particular car. But I would think that that's probably where I would be looking at. I think a good shop's going to say, let's listen to the noise in the morning, and then let's make some modifications. I mean, even sometimes we squirt water underneath the cover, and that makes the noise go away. And then we think, okay, well, we've got an idler pulley that's hanging up on the belt. When we put water there, it covered up the noise. We're still going to have to take the front of the motor apart and fix it.
Yeah.
So that's not really a big deal, though. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you. And Jim, you stay there because I'm going to get you. But I got to take a break because Gil's mad at me because I'm only 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. Thank you for being at the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I want to talk to you real quick about Farm Bureau Financial Services, which is Farm Bureau Financial Services, and the acronym is FBFS. They are an insurance company I work for. And as you well know, I'm a mechanical expert, and I object when an insurance company calls me and they want to write my report for me and they want to put words in my mouth. Farm Bureau is not that company. I've worked for them for many, many years. They just want the truth, and they're not writing my report, and they don't push on me, and they don't tug on me, and if I write a report that favors them, fine, and if it doesn't, they don't care. Well, they're looking for customer service representatives. So if you have experience in that field working for an insurance company and their environment, they obviously have to multitask and have strong organizational skills. And hopefully you have high initiative, a positive attitude, you have strong customer service and management, time management skills, then really I would suggest that you go to FBFScareers.com, Farm Bureau Financial Services, FBFScareers.com. And fill out an application. I can just tell you that there are three companies that I really like to work for because they want to know the truth. Some of the other companies want to write my report for me and put words in my mouth. And there's three of them that just want the truth. And Farm Bureau is one of those. So if you are a customer service rep now or if you have experience in that field and you want to look at another job and sniff around, then Farm Bureau's looking. Let's go to the phones, and Tim, you're up next. Tim, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
See, I have an answer for one of your previous callers, maybe.
Okay, I'm all ears.
With the guy with the anti-theft alarm kept on going off and whatever.
Right, right.
Alarm. He did. Yeah, he didn't say that he had a remote, a fob. A lot of times the battery goes dead in the fob, and then it sets off all kinds of alarms.
Okay. Okay, that's great. And you know, you've just kind of warmed up my head a little bit. I remember a situation where we took a car in to that Sounds Good to Me, that stereo shop and alarm shop, and I remember my wife saying all they did is change the alarm and the battery, or the battery and the alarm and the fob. And I never understood the connection there, but that makes sense. And I really appreciate, as long as you were on hold, I really appreciate you doing that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I have one more question for the older mechanic gearheads. I have a 390 Ford FE engine, and I installed a high volume oil pump in it when I redid the engine. Is there a possibility of draining the pan if you get too high in RPM?
No. No. No, you're worried about you're going to suck all the, well, wait a minute now, you're going to suck all the oil out of the pan and where we start sucking air from the sump. But no, because that oil's all got to go up to the top of the motor and then come back through. So I've never seen that happen in any application at all ever, unless, of course, we end up with a huge oil leak at one of the valve covers, and we fill it up, and then we start puking oil out of the valve cover, and then, yes, you'll probably run it out over a long period of time, but that's a leak associated with the problem.
Oh.
So, no, I'll tell you, I'd like you to email me that, because I know a Ford guy, and I know a Ford guy that knows that motor. But I'm telling you,
okay.
I've never seen that before on any hot rod I've ever built or I've ever worked on. I've never seen that before where the motor pulled all the oil out of the pan and the pan went dry before the oil that was delivered to the cam and the pistons and the crankshaft filled back up. I've never seen that happen.
Okay.
All righty.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you for holding as long as you did. Mark at MarkSalem.com, and I'll ask somebody that knows the old Ford motors. Paul, you're up next. How can I help you, Paul?
Yeah, Mark. I have a Equinox Chevrolet 2010 four-cylinder automatic, and it has 54,000 miles on it. Again, I bought it new. Now, the manual says you don't need to check the transmission. Yet I was looking online, and they said when they get to be that old, you should be checking the oil level in the transmission. And my question is there a correct step or procedure you use to check it, because there's no dipstick?
Okay. Yes, I have an answer for you. Your car is 12 years old, and you only have 54,000 miles on it. So I don't imagine that this car was used to take a bunch of high school kids to Denver, Colorado. I mean, it's not really.
No, we're old
run.
People.
Exactly.
We're old when we bought it, and now we're just older.
Yep. I understand. And so my advice to you is at the 10-year mark, I would have said to you, let's just go ahead and flush it. Now, we're going to hook up a machine, and we're going to push in, and we're going to suck out. And then there's a way to determine when it's full. So you're basically just doing a change, and there may or may not be a filter. But some of the guys are going to argue, say, Mark, it only had 54,000 miles on it. My argument's going to be it's 12 years old. And he hasn't driven the wheels off of it, so it means it's not gone through a lot of heat cycles, so there's got to be a considerable amount of moisture in that transmission. So we're going to have that kind of an argument. I think the default is go ahead and do it. It'll put you in a peace of mind. That transmission is already gone 12 years. It'll go another 12 years. At this kind of mileage, you'll have no problem at all. I think it's a good bet to go ahead and flush it and fill it now. I think that's a good idea.
That's so okay. I was just curious if it could be low. It wouldn't be low if it was accumulating moisture. Is that correct?
No. The moisture is this. We got to get the oil temperature up over 212 to turn the water to a vapor. That's what we have to do. That's called a heat cycle. And so
okay, I'm trying to picture in my mind, you say there would be moisture in the oil.
Yeah.
That would make your oil seem to be fuller than it is.
Oh, I'm talking about a minute amount of moisture.
Not an issue then.
No.
My primary concern is I would just like to check it and see where it's at, if the level's correct or not, there's a correct procedure to do that.
I don't know that your 10 is going to have a way for the computer to know that you're low, but the newer model cars certainly have a level sensor in them. But as far as that's concerned, whoever does your oil changes, just ask them to do that. There is a process and a procedure for us to check the fluid level in those. So just have them do it. Just say, how much will you charge me to check the fluid level? And by the way, there's no dipstick on it. And then the shop will just say...
Well, we know that. There's a fill plug. I looked at the manual. It says you take the fill plug out. Okay, but it doesn't say whether it's running, it's in neutral, or it's in park.
That's their job. They're better know that. I don't know that. I'd have to look it up, but that's their job. They have to know that. There's just a fill, if there's a fill in there, and if you take the fill out and you put your finger in there and you can touch fluid, I think you're done, because if it's above the hole, it's all going to come out. It can't be above the hole.
Well, they just said it should dribble. What they're saying is it should just dribble out a little bit.
Okay, then take the plug out yourself, or have the next guy that does the oil change stick his little finger in there and see if it dribbles out. Because when you stick your little finger in there and bend it to a 90-degree angle...
Okay, I did pull the plug. But when I pulled it out, it just literally poured out of there. So how in the world could that be have more oil in it now after 12 years? It's never been serviced by anybody but me and my neighbor, who's a retired mechanic, and we've never messed with the transmission.
Okay, I understand. I wish you would have told me this all at the very beginning. So you think the transmission has a bunch of water in it because it gushed out of the hole you came from. I think that's a false... way to go. I don't think it's a good thing. I don't think there's any validity to it. And if your mechanic buddy was with you and it all gushed out, he could have looked at it to see if it had water in it, because there's going to be a color change to it and there's going to be some white foam. So I don't know what to tell you. I'm just telling you, if you want to know, if you want to change it, now's the time. Fine. And if not, if it gushes out of the plug, then we're done. Got to run though. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back to 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us if you'd like to do that. And let me look right here, 116. I just got to write this number down. And we're going to go to Daniel. Daniel, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good.
Yes.
Hey, I had a question about gasoline and the dilution, or if you have old gas, it doesn't stink real bad. What would your suggested dilution if you want to mix it with your daily driver, or would you advise it?
I understand completely. How much bad gas you think you got?
Oh, just like in gas cans that I use for lawnmowers and stuff, but I haven't used it in a while.
All right. Do you have any idea what size the gas tank is on the vehicle you want to put it in?
Yeah, like a 12-gallon, let's say, for example.
I would think 1 gallon and the 12-gallon would be no harm, no foul, no way that you're going to get in any trouble.
Okay. And what's your opinion on the fuel stabilizers? You like the Stabilize? Do you think those work?
Well, I think on a carbureted motor, and
well,
and
I mean for storing gas.
For me, I'm using it faster than I need Stabil. If I'm going to have a gas can at the barn, it's going to be filled at least once or twice. It's going to be filled at least once every 2 months. And so I'm not. But now, I do have a variety of older cars that may only be driven for 2 or 3 days a year, and I use Stabil.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm asking about. Yeah. I have the same situation, so.
Yep, I'd use Stabil on the vehicles, no matter whether it's an old vintage or it's a brand new one. Stabil is a good thing to keep the gasoline from turning rancid. And if this car's going to sit for any longer than 3 or 4 months, then yes, I would use Stabil.
Okay, and is that a good rule of thumb, using your nose for bad gas?
Yeah, heck yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if it don't stink, it's still good, right?
Well, and see, here's the deal. You already know what good gas smells like because you've got gas cans around. So when you fill it up, you know what good gas smells like. Well, when you get some of that rancid gas, there's no question. I mean, anybody that has half a brain, and if I were to put two beakers of gasoline underneath their nose, they would know the rancid one. So that the nose is a very good option to determine the quality of the gasoline in the tank, in the can or in the tank. Okay.
Excellent. That's what I was looking for. Yeah, because I was just concerned with, stocking up on some gas right now with every gas can I got.
And I understand that. I understand that completely. And as a joke, you can always ask your wife if this is rancid or not, and take turns on coming to that conclusion. But anybody with a good nose can, like I said, two cups of gas, one brand new, one rancid. 99 of my friends out of 100 are going to know the difference between the good and the bad, and the other one's probably been drinking. So.
Excellent.
That's how it works. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Ken, you're up next. How can I help you, Ken?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2008 Toyota Tacoma, the bigger V6 one, and my horn went out yesterday. I checked the fuse, even checked it with a voltmeter. The fuse is good. I pulled the relay and reseated it, and the horn worked. And this morning, it went out again. So I went down, got another. I got a new relay, put that in, and it worked. I drove it for about 5 minutes. Decided to check the horn again, and it's dead again.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if you have any other things that I can check or if you have a recommendation for a shop that's good with electrical diagnosis.
On a 1 to 10 scale, this is about a 2. So
This
is what I want you to do. When the horn's not working, I want you to grab a hold of the 12 o'clock position and the 6 o'clock position, and I want you to rock that steering wheel real hard. Then check the horn. Then go 3 to 9 and rock that. Because here's the deal. We're typically going to either add 12 volts to the horn, and then the horn button is going to provide the ground. Okay?
Okay.
So the relay is likely going to be, when you turn on the key, we're going to apply power to the horn or power to ground. It, one way or another, we're dealing with the power and the ground side of the horn. The question is which end is it on? If it's wired that the power, when you turn the key to the on position, it automatically powers up the horn, but the ground is from the horn pad. Well, you got two different problems, you got two different circuits there. You worked on the power side of the horn and put a new relay in it, and the fact that it's still bad doesn't mean that the relay's bad. It means that you're on the wrong side of the horn.
Right.
And so I want you to manhandle, push on the horn, and then grab the 12 o'clock position and just jerk it around, and then 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and if you can get it...
So little, keep the horn button pushed down?
Yeah, the whole time.
Okay. Yeah.
And manhandle the pad. Push the pad on the right side, the left side, the top, and the bottom. Hit it hard with your fist. See if the... How many miles are on this thing?
194.
Okay. Yeah, it's got its use. I'm betting that the horn pad is the problem. And sometimes you could take the horn pad apart, and sometimes you can put a matchbook in there to push the contacts a little closer to one.
Okay.
So something like that, stupid. Yeah, I think you're just working on the wrong leg.
So some kind of dirty contact or something like that's going on. Is what you're
thinking. You keep in mind that there's a ring underneath the steering wheel, but the little carbon button that rides on the ring is with the steering wheel. Well, you can imagine that it's going to wear a little bit. So if you start manhandling the steering wheel, and Mark, if I push on the 3 o'clock side real hard and honk it, it'll work. But if I let go on the 3 o'clock side, it doesn't work, and it doesn't work 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock, boom, we're done. We got to go in and take the horn pad off, and somehow or another fix that little button that's supposed to ride on that piece of metal. And so we'll just go in and fix it.
And if that's not something I'm able to do, do you have a shop that's good for that.
Yeah, tell me general cross streets from where you're at.
My home is on the northwest Peoria, but okay. My office is I-17 in Deer Valley.
Okay. Action Auto, northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley, Tom. And,
okay.
He's not going to have any problem with this. I've known Tom since 1983. I know he's a really good guy, and I have no problem sending you there because on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2 or a 3, and his guys will have this no problem. And that's it. So, yes, Auto, northwest corner. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, you bet. No problem. TOT Action Auto. All righty. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to John.
John, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. Same as ever, I guess.
Okay.
I'm going to take us back to that guy that was concerned about the oil being pumped out of the sump up into the engine and start sucking air in the oil pump. The reality of the way engines are oiling, and you know this, is that the primary flow from the pump goes to the crankshaft, and then, of course, others bled off up into the valve train. But they got to keep that crank looped first thing because it's under the most stress. And as such, the oil coming out of those bearings and, you know, off the crankshaft and piston rods is going to go a very short distance back into the sump. You know, kind of like raining off the crankshaft.
Right.
It'd take a really, really thick oil and a really high volume pump to actually empty out the sump, you know, in pushing the oil out of there.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit about what I was thinking. That sure sounded like a YouTube thing to me. because I mean, come on. I got 38,000 customers. We have 150,000 vehicles that have come into our shop and we're responsible for. I've never seen this happen. So I'm thinking somebody's got a brand new FE, somebody's got a brand new motor. They've heard this on YouTube or on Google, or they heard it at the campfire the other night, and they're worried about it. That's the first time in my life I've ever had that question before. and I was thinking my computer's running like full speed. I can hear the disc spinning, and I'm going, how would that happen? How would we pump the oil up into the crank, into the cam, into the lifters, and we'd have to absorb at least five quarts of oil, in all of those places to run the sump dry?
The return holes in the heads would have to be plugged up completely to hold it up there.
So, and not only that, we'd have all kinds of oil in the valve cover, and more than likely to be puking it out of the valve where the filler neck is. So, I mean, I'm thinking about all this kind of stuff, but I didn't want to be rude, and it was a question I had never been asked before, and so I did the best I could. But I agree with you. It's very difficult to think that we're going to end up with all of these 5, 6, 7, however many quarts of oil this thing holds, and we're going to have it on the top part of the motor where the tolerances are the thickness of a human hair. So I can't imagine that we're going to suck all that oil out and have it up there. Where the heck would it go? And I didn't, but it's a question I've never heard before.
But it's gonna pump out of the crankshaft, you know, as it's going to, you know, each rod bearing,
each
main bearing. So it's gonna be pushing out of all those places and raining down off the crank onto the sump again. So that's the earliest oil it returns.
No, and let me just change your wording just a little bit for everybody. See, we're going to have, when we pump oil into the crankshaft, it's going to rain back in the swimming pool it just came from, which is the oil pan.
Exactly.
So it's going to be a vicious circle we're going to take oil out of the oil pan, run it through the oil pump, send it to the crankshaft, and it's going to rain right 100% of it, well, not 100% of it, 70% of it is going to rain right back down into the swimming pool it came from. The rest of it's going to go up to the top of the motor, and it's going to rain down and then go back in the swimming pool. So we're talking about...
It's going to go down the rain gutters.
Yeah. Because, see, when you start talking about holes in the head and running oil through them, the people are going, hole in the head? And then they're thinking that's bad, but you and I both know that that's a drain hole. So as the valves are shedding
oil, there you go.
There you go. We have to use the right terminology, doggone it, or otherwise we're going to get into trouble. Anyway, John, thank you very much for bringing that up. Thank you. I'm glad you brought it close to that. But if he sends me an email, I'm still going to check with a couple of my buddies on that Ford FE motor, but I think you and I have hashed it out enough to where we know that that's, I'll put it to you this way. Have you ever seen that happen, John?
Absolutely not.
I've seen
pressure starvation caused by, believe it or not, timing gears. When GM made the nylon coated cam gear.
Yep.
Those would strip off and end up filling the oil pickup.
Yep.
But that's a pretty rare occasion.
Yeah. No, and I had told him to, you know, send me his email and stuff like that. And if he's heard the show, and if not, then I'll tell him about the conversation we had. But thank you very much, John. Thank you very much. 18 callers is today. That's a pretty doggone good day. Gil, thank you for being the best radio, manager, operator, board op, producer. And I know that they pay you extra just to run my show just because how ornery I am. And if that's the case, then, you should ask for a raise because next week, I'm going to be worse. I'll see you next week, yo. Bye.